Here's to the finest crew in Starfleet.
Engage.
Captain Jean-Luc Picard, the U.S.
Commander Benjamin Sisko, the Federation Starbase, Deep Space Nine.
Welcome to The Greatest Generation. It's a Star Trek podcast by two guys who are a little bit embarrassed to have a Star Trek podcast, who are still drunk from the first podcast they recorded in the day. Madam Pranica.
Oh man, you really slurred that. That was fun. I'm Ben Harrison.
This is truly uncharted territory, Ben, because we finish every show with kind of a lottery system. A lottery system that tells us if the next show we record is going to be a drunk episode. But the thing is, the problem with this rule, Ben, is that we typically record two a day.
Yeah.
And so if the first episode hits that lottery, you really get two for the price of one, don't you?
Yeah, you get two for the price of one. And if this is the first time you've ever tuned in to The Greatest Generation, I think I speak for both of us when I say we're sorry.
Oh, boy. Well, one of the things I wanted to do for our Marin Open, Ben, was tend to this giant box that's been on my desk.
Ew.
We got mail at our mail stop, and I kind of want to open it.
Open that fucker up.
Captain, I'm sorry to disturb you.
I'm receiving a code 47.
Verify.
It is code 47, sir. Starfleet emergency frequency.
Captain's eyes only.
Can you hear the liquid? It's clearly a box of liquid.
Plausibly liquidy, Adam.
Ben, what we have are two packages from Philip E. from Henrico, Virginia. I'm going to start with the small one. The smaller of the two. This is in a
wait, so he
envelope.
Sent two different boxes?
He sent a box that is roughly one by one by one, and then a padded envelope.
Huh. Wow.
And I'm opening the padded envelope now. I'm going to need a tool for this.
Adam, you don't have a Swiss Army knife in your pocket, as I always do, 100% of the time?
100 out of 100, really?
Yeah.
Oh, jeez. No, that's not me.
Always rolling with the Swiss Army knife. I am so committed to rolling with the Swiss Army knife that I have a foolproof method for sneaking a Swiss Army knife past TSA that I have never gotten caught.
You keystring that knife, Ben? Up the Potomac?
No,
up
I just
the Potomac
it,
River?
I put it in my bag in a particular way, and you know, if they ask me a question about it, I will dig it out and give it to them. But they never have, not even a single time.
Ben.
What?
Look at me. Look at me. I have the Bible now. What we have received from Philip is the Star Trek DS9 Bible.
Whoa!
Not only do we have the Bible, but we have the Star Trek Deep Space Nine Companion, which is like a role-playing game book-sized book. It is really big. And it looks like it goes episode by episode. It's got...
Wow.
It's got behind-the-scenes pictures. It's got schematics. It's really something.
Damn.
This is the whole thing.
Fucking A. Fucking
well,
A.
I never thought I'd have a Bible again in my possession, and here we are.
I tell you what I'd do with $1 million, man. Deep Space Nine podcast.
Two podcasts in the same week. That's what I'd do.
What's the other box got?
I'm opening that box, Ben. Figured the type of podcast that would like a guy like me. All right, we get a letter on top, Ben. Philip writes, "Thank you for unburdening me of these things. Strangely, my wife didn't ask me where I was sending them. Sorry to pass along the curse of packaging peanuts." They're kind of like the curse in It Follows, but with less sex and more death. Looks like there's Romulan ales, Panini stickers, quote, cards, collectible action marbles, the Bible, the companion. That's what's in the box.
Oh, man.
So we've got action marbles. Those are on top. These action marbles are actually pretty badass. Package of five. There does not appear to be... what's the big marble? Is that the slammer? It's the... When you're playing marbles?
That's a pog term, slammer.
Oh, I got that wrong then.
I've always thought of myself as being the big marble, so I guess you could call it the Ben?
Yeah, the one single marble. That would be you. Oh boy, we've got some cards in here. Now that you're settled, Ben, some of this mail's got to go to you.
Yeah, you and your wife recently came and visited me and my wife here in sunny Los Angeles, and at one point we were all out, and your wife confessed that you had gone through my giant Tupperware box of Star Trek paraphernalia that we've been gifted by our viewers. And we were like, yeah, I have one of the same. It's not weird for me to have that.
There's no shame in that.
No. So, I mean, half the stuff in that box I intend to put up on my wall. I just haven't put anything on the walls in my apartment yet.
You don't have to explain it to me.
I'm not explaining it to you. I'm explaining it to your wife. It's going to be half full by the time she sees it next.
There's a fucking stack of Panini stickers.
What is Panini stickers?
If a pack of stickers is phenomenologically equivalent to a pack of cards, then there does exist a natural Jaeger. In fact, it is the most natural of Jaegers since he isn't even facing the fucking camera. And sure enough, Ben, I've got a natural Jaeger here.
Whoa.
There's a sticker that has Biff Jaeger in it. He is not facing the camera. His back is to the camera completely. Stack of these stickers, Ben, and I have withdrawn a can of Romulan ale. It's so wrapped in bubble wrap, I can't even describe it to you.
Is it like one thing that we had our infamous Christmas present episode, and one package that we didn't open on that episode that we got like a couple days after we recorded that was you and I each got boxes from Plevim that were just full of crazy shit from his job.
We had a really long text thread about what the gift from Plevim might have meant.
Because
and if it was a threat or not.
The biggest thing in it was a hazmat suit. And then within the box also was a smaller box that said, "Nothing in here is toxic, I promise." Or something like that.
Philip has sent us Romulan Ale Energy Drink. It's 8.4 ounces of straight niacin, Ben.
Oh,
It's all the niacin, vitamin B6, and vitamin B12 you could want in an energy drink. It looks like there are a number of cans in here. One of them is for you. I promise.
Maybe I'll put that blue vodka that Plevim sent me into that Romulan ale.
There's another bottle of something that is a much larger format.
You know, Romulan ale should be illegal.
Anyone picking up a radiation surge, Ben? Only the size of my head. This is Woot Stout. Stone Farking Wheaton. It's a beer. It's a beer brewed with Will Wheaton.
Whoa.
Will Wheaton and Drew Curtis and Greg Koch. It's a microbrew from Stone Brewing. And looks like we got a couple of these too. Ben, if you've been drinking all day the way I have, a stout beer, not necessarily the choice for this moment in the drinking.
No.
There's so many of these in the box, Ben. thank you for sending us this box of fun things, Philip. We really appreciate it. His letter closes with, thank you for everything you do to echo the sentiments of others before me. There have been many weeks in which your show has been the thing I've most looked forward to. Shout out to Justin, the beautiful and sweet young man who swept my little brother Matt off his feet. I would call him my partner in Trek shame, but I don't think he's ashamed. I would only ask him how he does that. Sincerely, Philip.
Aww.
Thanks, dude. A energy drink taste test is forthcoming. I don't know. Man. Should I do that right now?
You might as well. You're a lot of drinks in, as far as I can tell.
I think it might get me up over the hump.
Yeah, you need to put a little niacin in that little system of yours.
I'm going to pour it into my now empty glass. Oh, boy, it is...
Meanwhile, I'm still drinking tequila and tonic.
Ben, and
I've gotten through my entire half bottle of Hornitos, and I've moved on to my bottle of Patron.
Ben, I'm going to send you a picture, which may be the worst picture I've ever taken, of this Romulan ale. It is almost impossibly blue. It looks like Barbicide.
What was the color of the vodka that Plavim sent you?
Also Barbicide colored.
Yeah.
It would actually go perfectly in this Romulan ale.
I say put some... I say... Don't fuck around, Adam. Go get that Plavim vodka and put it in that Romulan ale.
All right, kill some time for me, will you?
Okay, our producer is making the stretch taffy hand motion. Our imagined producer on this program, because we don't have a producer.
A funny thing happened when I went upstairs. My wife was preparing me a cocktail because she's the greatest.
Oh, yeah, your wife is... Your wife is really second to none, Adam. She's one of my favorite people.
She had no idea I had been drinking all afternoon for work. And so she's like, well, I guess I'm going to put this in the fridge for you to enjoy later. All right, Ben. I'm going to... did you get the picture I sent of this blue drink?
I got that.
Okay, I'm gonna take a sip of it without the vodka.
It's got a real frothy head on it, this blue drink.
The head has gone down. It's in its refractory period.
I also really appreciate that you have L Carr's coasters for your office.
Yeah, I got that. I got the L Carr's coasters at the MoPOP, the Museum of Pop Culture here in Seattle.
Fuck, dude.
Yeah, pretty dope.
God, I want that.
Gotta get those coasters, bud.
That's like the ideal, like, branded product is a coaster, because it's like a piece of clear lucite with the L Carr stuff on the back of it, which is exactly how they made the L Carrs look in the show. You know,
it's everything you need.
It's like owning a piece of the Enterprise computer.
This Romulan ale is one of the better energy drink flavors I've ever had. It is most assuredly not Red Bull flavored. It does not taste like Smarties.
Oh, man.
It mostly just tastes like... it tastes like fruit punch. That's what it tastes like.
Did I ever tell you about the time that Red Bull almost ruined my life?
I would love to hear that story, Ben. Lay it on me.
Are we going to have a Star Trek podcast at some point, though?
I want to see how long we can run this Marin open. Let's do it.
Well, I got hired to shoot a promo video for a technology company, and the technology that they were developing was a system of costume and set-based triggers where a dancer on a stage could trigger lighting effects. So there would be like a square on the floor that they could stamp on, or like a part of their costume that they could slap, and the lighting would change. And the idea was that this would be great for live shows where your singing, dancing type musician would be able to like interact more more in sync with their lighting.
Something you'd want to do for the drop, right?
Right, exactly. This is exactly what this would be perfect for. And so I shot a series of promos or like pitch videos for this. And where we shot this was the Red Bull party space in Soho, New York. Red Bull has like a fancy loft apartment in Soho where they have like secret concerts and shit. And we shot for like a week in this space.
Do people fly improvised homemade planes off of the balcony into the crowd below? Is that a thing that they do here too?
Yeah. The dozens of people have died at this. But one of the things about like going to work every day at this space was that there was just coolers full of Red Bull that you are free to take as much of as you would like. And I was like, these cost like $3 or $4. I'll just fill my backpack up with them at the end of the day. And like a month later, I was like, serious, like my relationship was falling apart. I was like deeply unhappy in so many ways. Like I was lashing out at life. And I was like, I was like looking for an explanation. I was like, you know, I've been through enough therapy that I was like trying to identify the variable that changed in my life that had triggered this series of events that were literally causing my like backslip into a very dark place. And I realized that what had happened was that I had literally filled my fridge with Red Bull and was drinking like two or three Red Bulls every day.
Two or three?
Yeah. I was really not aware of the power of the Red Bull. And the second I cut him out, like everything went back to normal.
Really?
Yeah, it was really kind of a magical situation.
Wow, dude.
Yeah.
It's quite a confession. Well, Philip, you don't know what you did by sending all this Romulan-branded Red Bull to us. I think I might just keep the energy drink for myself and split the beer with my good friend Ben Harrison.
Yeah, I can't be trusted with that type of stuff.
Wow. Well, I'm glad... Glad it turns out that you didn't need them wings, Ben, to live a happy life.
I got them built in, buddy.
I'm now taking a drink of the beverage with the blue vodka that Plavim sent us. It is that is a cocktail I remember from college. I only ever drink Red Bull and vodka at a casino.
Yeah.
It has a different name there. It's called the Gambler's Delight. I don't know what you call it outside a casino when it's blue like this. But it's going to, I hope it gets me through the rest of this pod without getting a hangover, which I can feel descending upon me.
Well.
Surrounded by Peanuts character stink lines of hangover spirits.
Whatever happens, Adam, please pass my apologies on to your wife.
She's the one who suffers the most for this show.
Yeah.
Just as yours does, Ben.
Yeah. Adam, do you want to get into the episode here at the 20 or so minute mark?
If there was one wish I had for this episode, it would be the children of the world singing in peace and harmony. On today's episode, we recap with our remaining time. season 1, episode 15, If Wishes Were Horses.
Do you realize how incredible this is? No, of course you don't.
Well, Adam, we start with a pretty familiar DS9 trope, which is Odo.
I'm Mr. Bunkin.
Harassing Quark in the bar. Enough of a trope that Quark even comments on it.
There hasn't been a ship in for 3 days, and yet you sit there like a
A Benarium hawk looking for prey.
A slow week is a great context for this episode, Adam.
It truly is. It's really the perfect episode to squeeze in the last 20 minutes of what's remaining of our podcast today. Quark and Odo are actually like talking a little bit of shop, because Odo is like, you sell holosuite programs to kids? I think that's pretty fucked up.
Yeah. Yeah, like, here I am, the law enforcement character, and I see that you have clientele in one Jake Sisko. What's up with that?
Like, the idea of future space pornography has got to be a thing that is so incredible we can't even imagine it at this point.
Yeah, and Jake Sisko, for the record, is giving Kira Nerys a run for her money in Height of Waistline.
Jake Sisko taking a baseball bat to his hollow suite does nothing to disabuse Odo of the idea that he might be going in there to do bad and adult things. But Quark is sort of like making the case of the same case that Vegas does in the 90s. Like, he's sort of rebranding his adult entertainment possibilities into a more family-friendly environment. He's like, look, I don't want the nickels of just the parents. I want the latinum of the entire family. If I can get them in here into my Disneylandification,
yeah,
of Quark's bar and the accompanying hollow suites, like, great. More customers, the better.
He's all about that fast quarter. Fuck a slow nickel. That's chump change.
There's a great line in here where they're talking about what Jake likes to do, like with the baseball and whatnot. And Quark describes Jake's baseball mitten, which is like the beef sandwich Philadelphia of sports references, right?
It really is.
It's so great.
Yeah, Deep Space Nine really beat us to our own sense of humor, Adam.
Totally. I love it.
Who cleans the cum out of the hollow suites?
Who's cleaning that bat?
What's that bat got on the end of it?
I think you're probably just going to want to throw away the bat.
Just replicate a new bat, Jake. No, Jake, replicate a new bat. Come on, buddy. Come on.
That bat's going straight for the incinerator.
Meanwhile, Bashir and Dax are on a pretty hot and heavy date in which, like, in a way that is preposterously self-confident, Bashir is saying how much Dax is on his mind.
I can't even concentrate.
You seem to be concentrating just fine on the junior lieutenant at the reception for Captain Stadius.
In some ways, I sort of admire that he's willing to just come out and say it. But on the other hand, Bashir is rebuffed constantly by Dax. Dax is not interested. Couldn't be any more clear.
No means no, Julian. And yes means yes.
I thought if one thing were clear by now, it's that you and I play things a little differently.
Do you think if you had sex with Dax, you could feel the trill?
I guess it sort of depends on if you're packing that Morn style crank.
If you're packing the Morn hammer, then I think the ankylosaur is the nail.
Yeah, if you're all up in them guts, you're going to feel the nail.
This viewer, if you're still hanging on,
which, this is the if episode. You're not, we don't blame you. We do not blame you for skipping, like, for hitting the forward 30 seconds a million times past this episode.
This the is worst the episode that gets us kicked off of Max Fun. This is it.
Yeah. Oh boy. We're sorry we ever did business with those gentlemen.
Benjamin R. Harrison and Adam Pranica do not reflect the views of Maximum Fun, LLC.
The values or views that we've... But Dex, she's able to stick this out and really well and truly shut Julian down. she really like blows any hope he might have of hooking up with her out the airlock.
Julian, you are a wonderful friend.
Her strategy is great because it's one of shame, right? It's like Bashir is copping to the idea that she's the only one for him. And Dax is like, oh yeah, like this girl that I saw you sweating and this other girl I saw you sweating big time. And Bashir has to sort of admit that he's a little bit of a whore. You know? There's no way Dax could appreciate how special she is to Bashir because to Bashir, he has a lot of female interests.
She sees the fucking type of shit he's on. She knows that he's a man that is all about cherche la femme, and she's not about that type of shit.
Dr. Bashir! Your cherche la femme is insulting to the French people!
In France, we have the Vichy government. They have many rules and regulations for what women you can and cannot relate with. She is not of your race. Therefore, leave her alone.
Your constant flirtation is a war crime.
Who is paying for all of this act, as you know?
Gold Ducat.
So we cut to the mechanics of an adult relationship, to the mechanics of a broken one, which is the family life of Chief O'Brien, Keiko, and their young daughter.
Keiko's back!
Bollocks!
Keiko's the type of person who goes all the way back to Earth to get her hair cut. Because she's come back with a tight bob.
Miles, none of the hair salons on the station know how to cut my hair.
And I guess like O'Brien doesn't have unsupervised visitation with his daughter because he's just trying to read her a goodnight story, and Keiko's like just all over his shit, like making sure he reads every word and does all the voices. Even
it's one of the few cases where the court has intervened within the context of a established marriage that hasn't even broken up and stipulated that the man cannot see the children unsupervised. I should ask my father-in-law, who is a family lawyer, about what is going on in this marriage.
Oh, that would be great. For more on this relationship, we take it to family lawyer expert, name redacted. Chief O'Brien's doing all the voices. I get the vibe he's a great dad. He's a better dad than he is a husband, in that he's actually interested in having a relationship with his daughter.
Not for nothing, but like the writers of this show have got to be really cheesed with what they've inherited from the TNG writers. W/R/T, the Miles and Keiko relationship, because like the opening implications of this relationship were that like they were getting married and basically didn't even know anything about each other. And
like this is a child born at Phaser Point, right?
They're getting into this now, and it is like it is the plausible extension of the relationship that was written for these two characters. But man, what a hole to dig yourself out of.
And yet, like it's the softest, loamiest hole to dig because there's no reason why they aren't tacking hard into an actual broken relationship that everyone can see. Like, it would be far more interesting to me as the viewer if that were the truth of the matter.
Right.
O'Brien's reading Rumpelstiltskin to his daughter. He's doing all the voices. He's making the craggy faces. She's loving it. It's great. He's observing the rules of his family lawyer. They tell her to go the fuck to sleep. Miles and Keiko leave her fairly large quarters for a small child in the station. Like, she's kind of got a condo inside a condo, it seems like.
This is what is dope about getting to the station early.
Yeah,
is
you
like
a choice of quarters.
Yeah, like the fucking property values are super low. And I'm sure that if you're a Starfleet, you're getting like kind of like a stipend for obtaining housing, right? Like if you live within the proper Federation, you can live in whatever house the fuck you want, right? Because there's no money or anything. But if you're living on Deep Space Nine, you've probably got to kind of like pay for things. So I bet their stipend goes pretty far on Deep Space Nine. And not only that, it's a station with a capacity for thousands. And there's like 400 people living here right now. So Chief O'Brien, like, one thing that he should be telling Keiko is like, listen, we live in a fucking space mansion right now.
It's true.
Look at the suite our daughter lives in.
It looks like a way better quarters than Sisko gets.
Yeah, and Sisko's sharing his quarters with like a 14-year-old boy who is totally girl crazy.
Say what you will about the relationship between Keiko and O'Brien, but at least their daughter isn't making rom-nog everywhere. Anytime he leaves the cabin.
Hey.
So they bail out of the bedroom, and like O'Brien makes a pass at his wife.
Yeah, like
an obligatory pass.
Out of the frying pan into the fire type of bailing out of the bedroom, where it's like, we're going to go from one bedroom to another bedroom.
Like, how would you like me to play Rumpelstiltskin all over that butt?
And
Keiko's like, Miles, we only do it through a sheet.
Bollocks.
Out wanders their kid, who is almost impossibly tiny, Ben. Like, you would be hard-pressed to find a child actor who could verbalize who would be younger and tinier than this actor.
Yeah. She's like, Daddy, he's in my room.
She's like, yeah, that guy you were making voices for, he's actually in there. He's in my bed. And O'Brien's like, all right, whatever. Stiltskin interrupt us. he goes in to check out the scene, and sure as shit, the Rumpelstiltskin himself appears.
Well, don't look so distraught. I'm only here to offer you my services, if you should need them.
Ben, if I'm writing a sci-fi show in the Star Trek universe.
Yes.
This is a place with myriad alien cultures, giant space battles, interpersonal drama. We're going right back to the fairy tale well, aren't we? We're going right back to the Robin Hoodification of Star Trek. Why are we doing this?
Yeah, man, I am not a merry man.
Me neither. At this point, it's a total groan. It's a groan job.
I think the writers wanted this to be a super creepy reveal, and somehow in the directing it became a real slide whistle, Adam.
I was reading the show notes for this one, and Colomini almost walked. He was like, I'm not doing a fucking Leprechaun episode, by the way, because I don't know if you've noticed, I'm Irish, and my people have fought for a long time against this fucking stereotype. And so the writers turned a leprechaun into Rumpelstiltskin, which is basically a leprechaun with a different name.
Wow. So it was originally a leprechaun.
It was.
Dang. Yeah.
I guess that was good enough to do the show. Here's the thing, like, the Rumpelstiltskin character could be made dark, like in a Leprechaun the Movie type of way, even. Like, but there's just nothing threatening about him.
Yeah, this is just a guy that would, like, otherwise be a big star on reddit.com/r/popping.
One of the big, big reasons for the quality of this episode is the splash page of writing credits, Ben. This is always a bad sign.
Yeah.
When you get three script credits and two story buys, this is a screen-filling number of creative credits here. And I think it's one of the reasons why this episode is really a mess.
Writer's salad is just, as you know, it's got a very low batting average for good creative work.
So what's going on here in fairly short order is that it's not just Rumpelstiltskin that's becoming real. It's imaginary characters are becoming real, like baseball stars that Jake inserts bats into in his Holosuite programs.
Yeah, and versions of Jadzia Dax that Bashir inserts bats into.
It's bats all the way down, Ben, and yeah, it's disgusting.
Yeah, so there's like an oversexed Dax, a baseball star that comes from the London Kings Baseball Club, and Rumpelstiltskin have all manifested themselves, and the senior staff are like, WTF, mate, like, where did we get all of these crazy characters from?
Benjamin Shishko, Major Kira, the rest of the senior staff. I'm registering my complaint in an official manner to state that my real doll business is the foremost purveyor of fake characters turned real.
If you want to fantasize about boning down with somebody or something, you can to Kevin Exbridge, first and foremost.
I've said it time and time again, my real dolls are bat-proof. The Kevin Exbridge bat shield of quality that you can depend on for durability.
Our Buck Bokai famously took two Louisville Sluggers in one hole.
Around the office, we called him.
Are you gonna say fuck Bokai?
Yeah.
Oh, Kevin. Oh, Kevin, you've never made us laugh that hard ever.
I'm crying.
I got a lot of tequila in me at this point, Adam.
Oh, this is the dumbest episode we've ever done.
I found myself falling to sleep watching this episode. I watched it at like 11 a.m. like after getting
a good
night's sleep, and I was like unable to keep my eyes open. I was so bored.
Well, that was before you knew of the existence of Fuck Bokai. So Sisko orders a yellow alert, just like against imaginations. This is the most insane thing. Like this is an episode full of insanity, but like Odo's chasing llamas around. Fuck Bokai is wandering around wanting to play catch with Jake.
He's rotating his bat with that wrist move. That's just so disturbing.
Like the move, if you're Sisko, is to have everyone confined to quarters, right? That way you keep your sick fuck fantasy in your condo.
No, the move is send the station into the wormhole and set self-destruct and fucking abandon ship. It is get the fuck out of here. Because I would say that the character that gets it the worst is Bashir, because his like sex fantasy is on full display to the woman who is the object of it. It is like, I feel like every guy in the world has had like a crazy sexual imagination about somebody he knows, and to have that just be on full display, like to have her know about that, is so fucking embarrassing.
It is. And what's so fucking irritating about this episode is that Dax Alpha, like, does not, or is that Dax Prime doesn't make him stew in that embarrassment. You should feel something here, and you just don't. Like, you don't even get the, you don't even get the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man threat of, like that level of clear your mindness about the people's imaginations, because everything is so benign. It's fucking llamas in the promenade.
I know.
Give me a fucking break.
If you're gonna make Julian,
there should
Bashir...
be 30 Borg cubes outside of the station. Like, that should be the level of threat that the imagination conjures.
Right, because Sisko is so damaged by that. But like if we're gonna just do the thing with Bashir having his sexual imagination put on display for everybody, which is like a great idea from a storytelling point of view, because Bashir has been established to be a total creepazoid.
Yeah.
Like, it's such a buzzkill for it to be Dax, who is so wizened and jaded sex-wise that she doesn't care about anything.
Yeah.
Like Dax, who we've established really wants that Mornhammer. like the childish advances of a Julian Bashir mean nothing to her.
Yeah.
And so she's just like, hey, like, don't worry about it. Like, it's totally cool that you want to bang me. But, like, the version of me that you want to bang is totally submissive. You should be ashamed of that.
Yeah, that's a great point. Like, the version of Dax that Bashir is attracted to is the resistant one. So why would, in his fantasy, he have conjured up the submissive version? Like, how much more creepy would it be if the Daxes were indistinguishable?
Right. The Dax that he conjures is dumb.
And the Dax that he conjures has a Mornhammer.
Sorry, Jadzia, I'm just really into pegging.
It's just the ankylosaur tail sticking out. I mean, there's a number of vignettes here. We go around the station and see the consequences of this. It's the llamas, it's Quark with a couple of car show girls on his arm.
Booth babes for Quark. Quark is just like an incorrigible misogynist. Ho-ho! Fun for him. Okay.
This seems like a historical amount of butt and underboob shown on a Star Trek series, though.
Yeah.
In this scene.
Yeah, there's definitely a Dabo girl that has like 4 full inches of underboob.
Yeah.
That we've seen a couple of times, and that is just like, holy mackerel, that's a lot of underboob.
It truly is, and I mean, I understand why it is the way it is, but if Bashir's having fantasies about Dax, wouldn't you imagine that, you know, she's dressed in a similar way?
I feel like the Ajit Pai FCC would not let that much underboob fly.
You'd have to pay an extra $30 in Ajit Pai's future internet to access that amount of underboob. One of the things about Fuck Bakai is that like, you look at baseball players now, and these are people with like bodies. These are the bodies of people who take their strength and conditioning seriously. They're like pro wrestler size sometimes. And yet Fuck Bakai has like sort of like the dumpy belly of a pro bowler. It's amazing. Future baseball has got to be awesome. It made me wonder if the versions of baseball players that Jake and Ben Sisko are conjuring in the holosuites,
yeah,
are like made fat and slow so that they can play against them in a competitive manner. Our main fake characters are Rumpelstiltskin, Fuck Bakai, and Dax Beta.
Sexy Poo Dax.
And all of them are allowed at Ops.
Yeah.
Also, they're just allowed to mill around on the station's bridge, which is like, Captain Picard didn't allow anyone under 18 on his bridge. let alone fucking Rumpelstiltskin.
Yeah, a guy with a blackhead so prominent that basically anybody in the room would want to go relieve the pressure on that thing.
Oh, man, I really wanted to squeeze.
I mean, talk about black alert.
Almost done with this Romulan ale, Ben. I'll have you know the niacin flush is in full bloom.
Well, Adam, we've been recording for an episode and a half here, or an episode and three quarters, really, and I really need to take a pee. What about you?
Yeah, I could do that.
All right, let's do a little theme music interstitial and go drain the main vein. What do you say?
All right, I'm going to hit pause.
To be quite honest about it, I was in a pail. Mr. Bucket, I have to revert back to my little state. I don't use the bucket anymore.
Sort of the sidecar to the appearances of these fake people is that there is a subspace rift happening, Ben, out in space, and it's a real threat to the station, right?
What does that mean? Whatever falls in there... it's just gone.
They've been talking about kind of like ecological impact on the Denorius Belt, which is, you know, for those folks just tuning in, where Deep Space Nine is located, of all of the warp signatures and starship traffic that the station being there has engendered. Like, normally, spaceships have avoided this part of space. And now spaceships are all up in it, and so like they've been like trying to scan and get a sense of like what the impact has been. Like Deep Space Nine has the benefit of being grandfathered into the existing building code, so you don't have to do like a soils report if you want to do some modifications on Deep Space Nine.
Now, when your old warehouse is grandfathered into you. District's building code. You don't have to install all the fire extinguishers that you ordinarily would need to in a brand new build. I like to remove all fire extinguishers from the premises.
This staircase in a new building would be considered a death trap, but in this building is considered a delightful, charming piece of culture and history.
This building is located in close proximity to the Motown Records Hall of Fame. It's where I like to go to embarrass myself in front of my new neighbors. So, the Rift is the Stay Puffed Marshmallow Man.
What did you do, Ray? Oh, shit!
Everything that is going on is the physical manifestation of a thing that is being imagined by one of the characters. Like, there's fucking a snowstorm on the promenade and emus running around, and but like every character that has a name and lines has like a very specific idea that is being manifested in real life. It's like the Michael Crichton novel Sphere that was developed into the terrible movie Sphere.
So you're saying the spacecraft crashed in the year
1709.
So you're saying the spacecraft crashed 300 years ago?
The titular sphere.
Yeah. They're able to manifest their imaginations. And
unfortunately, one of the eight writers of this episode didn't have the wherewithal to resist dumping the secret into the episode 20 minutes before the end. Because we get kind of a McLaughlin group.
Issue one.
Of Fuck Bakai, Dax Beta, and Rumpelstiltskin, where they're like, boy, I don't know if they're getting it. What if they don't get what we're trying to do here? Like, that little interstitial is so unnecessary and totally deflates whatever level of crisis we're reaching in the show.
Yeah. I mean, if you're going to make every other character be a figment of somebody's imagination, you don't want to put the figments in cahoots with each other. Right. That's just like a general writing rule.
Especially because of what we get in the denouement at the end. Did I say that right?
Your French pronunciation is always really remarkable.
Upsetting. It's one of my worst impressions.
I'm sure our friend Manu Sadia, whose name I am sure I'm mispronouncing, would make a lot of fun of you.
I'm sure. So this rift is dropping bangers on the station, Ben, and it's becoming life-threatening.
It's becoming life-threatening, and like everybody's kind of dealing with it in different ways. It is shaking the station to its core, but like Quark is obsessed with finding the babes that he lost track of. O'Brien is obsessed with figuring out how to like get rid of Rumpelstiltskin, who keeps offering to like lend a hand in the like station defense operation at the cost of Miles's wife and daughter, which he really resists. Like, surprisingly, Miles is not willing to give up Keiko.
I've always wanted a daughter.
Miles?
You don't see the inner tension, but you know he's got to be considering that offer.
Yeah, like he should turn to camera and then just like, you know, crossfade to all of the fights he's had on camera with Keiko, right?
It's a clean slate. It's a real chance for him.
He really believes in this marriage, Adam.
No one else does.
The ultimate climax is when Sisko is like, everybody, like, this fucking rift that's gonna like blow up the system, all of these characters, they're all the same thing, man. It's all things that we imagined and made true in imagining them. So just believe that they are not true, man.
Haven't you all seen Ghostbusters? It's like that. Don't yeah. be Ray.
And so, like, there's a fun, like, around the horn where, like, everybody is, like, picking up on it at their own pace. Like, oh, we have to act like there's not magnetic waves rocking the station and believe it intrinsically, and then there won't be magnetic rays rocking the station.
O'Brien's got to pretend that Keiko and his daughter aren't in the same room with him. And so they go.
And so the station is saved, the crisis is averted, and Sisko's like, all right, guys, well, that was unsatisfying because we don't know why that happened, so I'll be in my office. I'll be hanging out. Anyways, good job, team.
And the he goes couch back. Of dissatisfaction is where I will be.
Yeah.
Which and I think is a new set for the show at this point, right? This angle on the ready room?
Yeah,
it feels new to me.
I feel like Sisko's office is so much bigger than Picard's, but they haven't really explored the space.
Yeah.
So Sisko sits down, he's like probably gonna like, you know, throw a baseball against the wall, and a butt plug lands in his hands, and he turns and there's Fuck Bokai.
Fuck Bokai in his dumpy baseball uniform.
Yeah. But to he's Fuck like, Bokai's credit, as a guy wearing a dumpy baseball uniform, that the collar on that undershirt is tight. He does not have the Michael Jordan bacon effect happening.
Fuck Bokai's like, I can guess why 30 people came to the last World Series ever. It's because all the players look like me. Not exactly an exhibition of humanity's finest in physicality.
Yeah. And he's like, you guys, like, imagination. That's, like, we're aliens, and we travel around, and we've never heard of imagination. It's amazing to us. Like, it's like you believe it, but you don't believe it. And he's like, what? And he's like, yeah, the premise of this episode... Commander Sisko, is that we have been acting out the things you've been imagining, and that's our way of exploring the universe. And Sisko's like, how? Like, why does that work? Like, how do you add that all up? And he's like, well, man, like, that's just how
Fuck
we roll.
Kai's like, haven't you seen the TNG episode Imaginary Friend? I've got it on DVD here. It's It's right below the Bajoran Visitors Bureau DVD that you have.
It's one of the worst episodes. So just give me a set. Give me 56 minutes. I'm going to show this to you, and then we can talk about it afterward.
You have to drink every time the name Clara gets said. Ben, if you have the chance to make imaginary friend again on DS9, you got to do it, right? Creatively. That's an itch you have to scratch.
There was a real amazing scene in this episode where Bashir is like really strongly resisting imagined Dax's sexual advances. Like he goes so far as to scan her with a tricorder to figure out why she wants to fuck him.
Yeah. It me.
That's just like an amazing amount of introspection from a creepy ass character, right?
Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't have expected that level of resistance from him.
Like, Bashir does not... Like, Bashir has presented himself as a character to be all about just getting into that puss, like, at all costs, right?
I think what we know from this episode is that maybe he's in it for the chase.
He likes the chase, but then once the chase is over, he wants that consent, man.
Yeah.
He doesn't want to fuck somebody that doesn't want to fuck.
Yeah, he wants consensual Mornhammer. If that brewery doesn't make a beer with that as the name, I'm going to be really
disappointed. I am sick and tired of being on the outside of these decisions, Adam. Consensual Mornhammer needs to be everything from now on.
Did you like this episode, Ben?
No! I like talking to you about it.
Yeah, I mean, I hated the episode. This may go down as one of the best episodes of Greatest Gen or the worst episode of Greatest Gen. I think that's something that we could never decide on its behalf.
We may never know. I might die of alcohol poisoning tonight.
I know I won't die of alcohol poisoning because I've been filled with 45% niacin.
Adam, I went and took a pee earlier in the evening, and I came out of the bathroom and was like, well, I guess I'm done with my tequila, so I'll pour myself a glass of wine. And then I came back and found myself a full glass of tequila that was poured and waiting for me.
Oh,
so
boy.
I have to finish a glass of tequila and then a glass of wine before my evening even winds down.
I don't know who's got the worse end of this, quite honestly.
Yeah.
I'm full hiccup drunk.
Oh, man.
Do we have any priority one messages, Ben?
I think we do, Adam.
Priority one message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
Need a supplemental income.
Supplemental income?
Supplemental.
Supplemental.
Yeah, it's extra.
But the interest alone could be enough to buy this ship.
Ben, we have a priority one message of a commercial nature.
Whoa!
The purchaser of which could never know the condition the hosts are in for its reading.
Let's try to give him... This is a caveat emptor type situation, you know?
Let's try to give him his money's worth. This is a commercial message from Brad Abrahams. Let's see if I can get through this message. Could there be a man alive that has had more intergalactic sexual intercourse than William T. Riker? Yes. Yes, there is. David Huggins is a 74-year-old man in Hoboken, New Jersey, that claims to have lost his virginity to an extraterrestrial woman, among 100 other encounters, and chronicled it all in his surreal paintings. The documentary
What is even happening right now, Adam?
The documentary Love and Saucers is his story. If you like aliens, art, and interspecies romance, as I'm sure all good Greatest Gen fans do. Check the film out.
What?
Stream it now, Ben, at loveandsaucers.com. It's streaming on multiple platforms as well as on DVD. You can at Love and Saucers on Twitter and find Love and Saucers on Facebook for more information. Wide release, Ben.
Wow.
Occurred on December 12th. And so this film has been out a while. I can imagine that it hasn't been forcibly removed from the internet at this point, and I strongly encourage everyone to watch it. I think, you know, sometimes you have to decide what to watch with your special person on a night after work. I think I'm going to propose Love and Saucers tonight.
Yeah.
We're gonna see how that goes.
That sounds like the right move.
Yeah. It's not just one sexual encounter, Ben. It's 100. The man is 74. I think it's fairly clear that he's packing some Mournhammer.
I kind of wish I had the digital versatile disc copy of this.
Yeah, this is something you want on your shelf, that's for sure.
Yeah. It's a good conversation starter. Well, Adam, we have a second priority one message here, and it is from Space Comrades, and it is for Ben and Adam.
Oh, it's a great line read, by the way.
It goes like this, Adam. We are democratic socialists for fully automated, luxury, non-binary space communism. We fully support your podcast and its controversial stance in favor of empathy and goodness for our fellow person. We greatly look forward to your radical take on the episode where Quark's employees unionize solidarity forever in space. Wow. Well, thank you, Space Comrades, for that space message to your space buddies, Ben and Adam.
I am I'm grateful to our space comrades, but I will have them know that empathy and caring about your fellow person is an apolitical idea.
Yeah.
So get with it and just be a good person, huh?
Yeah. Yeah. First of all, be empathic,
jerks,
and care for your fellow person, and then have a political stance.
Right.
Not the other way around.
That's a good foundation.
Yeah. Well, I'm down with the vibe that the space comrades are putting out. So
I'm a space comrade, and I vote.
That is a bumper sticker that is available now for sale on the Maximum Fun Store at maxfunstore.com.
If you have a commercial message or a personal message of a political or any other nature, you can go to MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron, where commercial messages are $200 and personal messages are $100. Let me tell you, either of those prices are a great value because these messages reach tens and tens and thousands of people.
Tens of people.
So get on it. And all of them do a great service in supporting the production of our show, and we thank them. Yarmok Angelad at Tanagra.
Yarmok Angelad at Tanagra. Hey, Adam.
What's that, Ben?
Did you find yourself a drunk Shimoda?
Drunk Shimoda. Drunk Shimoda.
Of course I did. Ben, it's Major Kira. I feel like she's been a Shimoda for me in a while. She has basically the line that sums up the entire episode to me. Bangers are being dropped all around. She's having to hold on to her console. She's reading Space Oscillations, Ben. And she basically turns to camera and says, "What the hell does that mean?" In like a moment of acting that you see Nana Visitor through the character. She's right there.
Yeah.
Can't tell if it's the character or the actor, but either way, what the hell does this even mean? She's my drunk Shimoda. What about you, Ben?
Man, we have a double Shimoda this episode, Adam, because
hell yeah.
when Commander Sisko like works out what's going on, he's doing the kind of round robin of each character checking in from their station at Ops. And everybody really picks up on what he's putting down, which is stop believing the thing we believe and believe the thing he's telling us to believe. And boy, Kira is not ready for that. Like, she takes 2.5 beats of story for every half beat that everybody else takes, because she's Kira, you know. Like, she believes what she believes. She is so self-confident, and yeah, like I really fucking loved her performance in that like final moment. She's like, no, fuck you. I'm telling you what I see on the screen, not what you want me to believe I see on the screen.
I wonder if there's a range to the imagination being depicted here. Like, could Kira's conjuring be like Mullabok is down on Bajor, like drowning in pizzas? Like, could shit be going on like back on Earth that O'Brien is like, O'Brien has destroyed his mother-in-law's home that he just spent 4 weeks in?
Yeah,
range on this?
Yeah, O'Brien just pictures knife holes in the air mattress in his mother-in-law's house.
Like, just a few tactical cut-tos would be a lot of fun in this episode.
Yeah, indeed.
Ben, what do we have coming up on the next one?
The next episode, Adam, is Season 1, Episode 16, The Forsaken. Well, an alien entity wreaks havoc on the station's computer. The irrepressible Loxana Troi sets her sights for romance with Odo?
You mean we've got a Loxana episode on Deep Space Nine, and she's looking for romance.
She's trying to bang down with Odo.
Odo's going to fill her up. Do you think Odo's going to put a bucket on her head?
Man, like, Odo's capacity as a coxman is really unparalleled, because he can really fill every crack and crevice, right?
He's a galaxy-class stick man. Man, likes Adam, of which I'm not sure Loxana has ever known.
Adam, like, I'm picturing you, Mario, like, just punching fists through the blocks of brick on the name of this episode, and you have just shattered every block that has presented itself. It's really remarkable.
I'm the fiery Mario of episode titles on this episode.
Well, Adam, do you want to find out if we're going to be doing the same bullshit we've been doing for this episode on the next episode?
Yeah, let's see. This one went so well.
Chula! Did I win?
Hardly.
We got a 7, Adam, so that means we are not drinking for the next episode. We're going to be doing it stone cold sober.
Wow. Well, hopefully people have not gotten used to us in this way to the degree that that would be a disappointment for them. I don't know if this show is sustainable if we were to do this like this every time.
No, we would die.
Phil would have to send me a lot more Romulan Ale energy drink, that's for sure.
Yeah. We can't rely on our listeners to be that generous, so we will have to rely on them to go to MaximumFun.org/donate if they like the show and they want to support it financially, and MaxFunStore.com if they want to buy swag from the show, get them t-shirts and pint glasses and what have you.
Yeah, I mean, not for nothing. Supporting the show gets you a couple of bonus episodes at this point. You get your Crimson Tide episode, which was a almost 90-minute podcast thrill ride from me and you. And you also get your Gremlins Holiday episode, if you're feeling still a little bit of the holiday spirit.
And our Star Trek Generations episode, which we recorded live. I think in San Francisco.
It's all in the donor feed. You got some great extras there. So those are our thank yous for supporting the show. We really appreciate it.
Indeed. Adam, people that want to talk to us online go on Twitter and they use the hashtag GreatestGen and they tweet at you at CutForTime and me at Benjamin R A H R. R is my you know, kind of my middle name.
Your name de plume?
My name de plume. My dinner. And they also go on the Facebook group. Greatest Gen Facebook group is a real fun hang.
It's basically the only safe place on the internet anymore.
And the only safe place on Reddit is the Greatest Gen subreddit. Well, there's actually two safe places on Reddit. There's Greatest Gen subreddit and the Maximum Fun subreddit.
And also R poppers.
Yeah, nothing safer than R slash popping. It's the only way I can get off these days. We should thank Dark Materia for our theme music and Adam Ragusea, who is responsible for all of the original music you hear on the program.
If you're upset with us about the quality of this episode, I would also say that that's Adam Ragusea's fault.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm laying that at his feet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can email him or just tweet at him.
I'd strongly encourage you to do that.
Mm-hmm.
All of our letters go to the goose.
Yeah, all of our letters go to the goose. The goose sacrificed his ability to not take responsibility for our show when he stopped doing the pub podcast. So this is all on him at this point.
Boy, quitting sure looks like a great option at this point, doesn't it, Ben? With that, we'll be back at you next time with another great episode of Star Trek Deep Space Nine. And an episode of The Greatest Generation Deep Space Nine, which I'm sure will show some. And an episode of The Greatest Generation Deep Space Nine, which will get filled up by Odo sexually.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.